This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
So you have my character, Dr. Simon Tam, who actually was on one of the planets, who was a very successful, very well-known doctor. His sister, who he thought was going off to further her education, becomes part of this horrific government experiment. So he basically sacrifices his entire life, his entire career, his entire everything to save her, break her out, and so now he's on the run from the government. Incidentally, he gets on this ship with this rogue crew, so now they are running from the government on the outskirts of the universe, trying to make their way the best that they can, and you know, and obviously within that, relationships get made and dynamics are created. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
That's a very good nutshell of the show.
I started sweating because I'm like, how do I explain Firefly in less than 15 minutes? The pressure.
You did well.
Good.
Oof. How did you react when you were given a script that has basically a Western set in space? It's like two childhood boy fantasies coming together.
I know. You know what's so funny is there was not a script when I first sat down with Joss. My agent back in New York was like, you know, here's the list of shows that, you know, people are talking about for pilot season. There's this pilot by Joss Whedon, you know, he's the Buffy guy and blah, 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 you know, and it's science fiction. We were both kind of like, huh, okay, well, sure, I'll meet him. You know, it's Joss Whedon, you know, and when I sat down with Joss, he's the one who explained to me what the world was. So to listen to Joss Whedon explain what's going on in his brain, I always remember my first meeting with him, and I stepped out of that, immediately got on the phone and was like, I want to do the show. I know there's no script. I want to do the show. I want to do anything I can to be on the show. This Joss guy is just, you know, just the most extraordinary man I've met in a while. There's something so accessible and intriguing and inspiring about him. And again, like I say, there was no script, so he had to explain, you know, what was going on and what my character was about and this world he created. And so for him to sort of spell out what a post-apocalyptic Western would feel like was just blew me away.
Mm. How does it feel entering the Whedon universe? Because he's got such a strong following of fans.
You know, I say he was the most accessible. You know, he has such a following and he has so much power and experience, and to work with him, you don't see any of that. All you see is just sort of this genius who knows exactly what he wants at every moment. He's the most, I keep using the word accessible, I don't know why. I think because he's just like, he became a friend very quickly, a friend and a mentor, and you could come to him with anything, and you could talk about anything, and every direction that he gave you was always, like, thought-provoking, and I appreciated that as an actor. And when he was on set, there was nobody else. Like, there weren't looming producers or, you know, it was Joss's world, and he called the shots, and he knew exactly what he wanted from shot to shot. So you actually worked in a more efficient manner. So your days were shorter, and you just had a better time, and you laughed, like laughed, and still got our day done. But then, you know, when you're invited to Joss's house, you know, for brunch or you know, his Shakespeare Sundays or what have you, the number of times that we're all over there, and you meet the other people that are part of the quote-unquote Whedonverse, everybody's sort of the same energy, and I think that's what he does. He kind of collects people that he meets along his way and then handpicks them and puts them all together, and I think that's why it works so well.
Did you say that he has Shakespeare Sundays?
Yeah, you know, he hasn't done one in a long time because he's been, obviously, he's in New York and he's so busy. But yes, he picks a play, assigns roles to actors, and you go over and have a bunch of wine and get on your feet and read Shakespeare.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very, very interesting guy.
Was it hard getting a lot of work done on set? Because I imagine, especially with Nathan Fillion around, who seems like a massive joker, how did you get the show?
You know, it's so funny. I was talking about this just recently. My mom came to visit from New York to L.A., and she came to set one day, and her last experience on set with me was a show called The Street, and we were trying to make our day, and it was a huge production, and we were bustling in and out, and it was so so tense. And then she came to Firefly, and it was all of us in the cargo bay, and we were shooting a lot that one day. We were shooting The Message, and that was the day that Nathan did that. It's on a gag reel somewhere. Mm. He comes up next to each and every one of us as the Steadicam's going in 360. And I remember my mom just being awestruck at how, again, we managed to laugh our asses off for a good portion of the day, yet we were done with 12 hours. And then when we wrapped, we were like, okay, where are we going to have dinner? You know, it just didn't, you know, it never end.
Does it still surprise you, the amazing fan following of the series, given that it was relatively short-lived?
Yeah, yes, yes. It still surprises me, and if you saw me right now, it still puts a smile on my face. I mean, the other day, I was bringing my daughter to nursery school, and I got stopped on my way up the block by a fan, and it's always, you know, takes me by surprise, and, you know, he thought he was bothering me, but I was like, no, you know, why is that a bother? Like, you loved it. I loved it. Like, let's love it together. Let's have a moment and let's take a picture and, oh, I got to get her to school. And so it is amazing. It's an experience, obviously, like no other that I've had. And I love it. That's why, you know, when you ask about the conventions, it's really wonderful, because just when you think starting to fade, it's, you know, the conventions are just this, like, this huge, you know, surge of energetic reunions.
What is it about the show that you think pulls people in so much?
I always think that it was the cast. I really do think that there was not one of us that was sort of a missing link. I think as a group, as a whole, we mutually loved each other and respected each other's work. And I think it does sound like such a cliche, but I really think that the organic chemistry that we had as people really bled off screen, through the screen, and, you know, coupled with, obviously, Joss's world that he created that was so unique, and it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. So I think it's sort of, as unique and specific as it was, it felt very universal. Felt like there was a little bit of something for everybody.
Would you have liked yours and Kaylee's character to get together sooner in the series?
I think we always knew that they were going to get together, so there was no rush, but now that the show was canceled, I was like, oh, drat, you know, we should have gotten together sooner. But, you know, you can never tell with these things, but I always thought, you know, if there was a second movie, I would love to have seen them have a baby. Like, I kind of pictured the first scene that you see Simon and Kaylee, like, you know, obviously a swollen-bellied Kaylee, like, maybe eight and a half months pregnant, shaving my head, telling me that I'm too pretty and we're going to have a baby and we're going to be too busy to muss with my hair. And, of course, Simon's just, you know, so gifted in the medical community, you know, he goes to deliver the baby and passes out before it comes.
Maybe you need to talk to Joss about this and he'll do some spin-off series for you.
Oh, I have. Believe me, I have.
This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.